listening to the Building Heroes podcast, which stands for Building Healthy, Energy Efficient, and Resilient Occupants, as an educational series. The Building Heroes podcast is proudly sponsored by Better Bricks and was created to help bridge the informational gaps that can occur between industry, academia, and experts in the industry doing this kind of work every single day. This podcast varies in topics per quarter and per year, generally featuring voices of industry experts and thought leaders in the fields of construction, design, technology, specialty trades, and skilled trades, as well as those who work in the humanities, energy efficiency, social science, and policy. If you want to learn more about Better Bricks, you can find them online at betterbricks.com, a commercial resource for energy efficiency.
My name is Shelby Ruiz, and I am a research associate at the Integrated Design and Construction Lab and your host of the Building Heroes podcast. Our guests today are from Puget Sound Abatement, and Puget Sound Abatement is a licensed and bonded asbestos removal company that helps people get timely protection against the dangers posed by asbestos through its quick, thorough, and safe asbestos abatement services. Puget Sound Abatement offers asbestos, lead, and other harmful material removal, including demolition, disposal, and restoration services. This episode is going to talk about hazardous materials that are lurking in our existing Washington State building stock. We're going to talk about the harms of these materials, what they actually are. We are going to be focusing majorly on lead and asbestos, but for those of you in the construction industry, there are a number of mentions of silica dust and other kinds of harmful materials that emerge from demolition, and talk about a few different examples of understanding harmful materials in our environment and what that means on a day-to-day basis. I'm going to kick it off by passing it to each of our speakers to introduce themselves first, and then we'll jump into what abatement is at a really high level and talk about it in a building context. Gabe, would you like to start?
Yes, my name is Gabe Arce. I am the marketing business developer for Puget Sound Abatement. Been in the industry about a year now. Before that, I did marketing for fitness, but I made the switch over this year to do abatement and kind of the blue collar style. I would say very rewarding, very interesting. And the more you learn about it, the more scary it is.
My name is Joe Hislop. I'm the director of operations at Puget Sound Abatement. Been doing this in and out of the industry about 10, 15 years. I was a fully licensed general contractor before I made the move to abatement and hazardous materials. I have my background in mold remediation, adhere building inspections, and it seemed just kind of natural to make that transition full-time to hazardous material removal.
Can one of you generally talk about what abatement is at a kind of high level for those of us who may not be experts, but more importantly, what is the role of abatement services in the construction industry?
Yeah, so abatement specifically is the removal or the mitigation of hazardous materials so it's safe for other people or other individuals to be within the same occupied space as the materials. Typically, that involves a dust-free removal, containment, HEPA vacuuming, and really a self-contained environmental area that separates any of the dust, debris, or airborne hazard pollutants towards the other trades. Specifically in Washington State, you know, it is required for any building to be tested for asbestos materials prior to any sort of demolition, remodel, renovation. And with some of the changes to some of the silica laws and other contaminants on job sites, it's all kind of leaning towards a hazardous demolition environment. Everything is done under PPE, everything is done under HEPA-VAC, and everything is done with some sort of air quality control testing. So really, abatement is anything and everything to do with air pollutants being released from a demolition or renovation project.
Gabe, on a very high level type of discussion, what other kind of harmful materials or other regulated now materials are there to remove and demolish safely in our built environments?
So some of the hazardous material that we specialize in is definitely asbestos, and asbestos can be in pretty much any building. Lead paint is another one. Everyone knows, has heard of lead paint. That is something we're still fighting today. Lead is another one that's just, you know, it can affect your endocrine system. It's very harmful for toddlers who don't have a fully functioning liver. Asbestos abatement is definitely our bread and butter. It's what we do the most of. In 1979, it was outlawed. So you're still seeing it today because they were allowed to use most of their materials, and it finally was outlawed until 1989. You still see it in many homes today, industrial and then as well as residential. So lead and asbestos are two of the main ones that we specialize in.
I think specifically some of the materials that a common person may find in their home, probably the most average one would be popcorn ceiling texture. A lot of people equate that directly to asbestos, but that's not always the case. It is oftentimes very associated with that because it is used as an adherent in the popcorn texture. But some of the even wall textures, some of the joint compounds used, roofing shingles, roofing tars, vinyl tile, vinyl flooring, the mastics, and even specifically in this area in Washington State, boilers and old oil furnaces that come from industrial metropolises like Tacoma, Seattle, all built around seaports, oftentimes have old recycled boilers and furnaces put into homes that came from shipyards or other industrial uses. Oftentimes those are heavily encased in asbestos.
And what specifically is it about asbestos or lead that is dangerous to humans, especially when it's put into the air, as you mentioned, being an air pollutant?
Well, asbestos is a fibrous material. So kind of when it is released into the air and you breathe it in, it goes into your lungs and it kind of has a hook to it. So it becomes lodged in your abdomen or your lungs. And over time, it stays there. And then it will help mutate your cells, and then your cells will become malignant. Over time, that can develop into a tumor, and then that can also be mesothelioma. So asbestos is definitely scary because due to the time that it takes for it to be seen, it can be between 30 to 50 years. So if you breathe it in, 30 to 50 years later, you can develop a cancer, and by then it is usually too late. As far as lead, Joe's mainly the expert in this, in that lead is primarily harmful more to children than it is to adults. It is more harmful to children because when you don't have a fully functioning liver, your body cannot process it as quickly. So it can cause more brain delay. It can cause a bit more diseases. It's very harmful for pregnant women. It's very more likely to miscarriage if you've been exposed to lead as you were pregnant. But both of them are considered very hazardous. And you see more and more regulations now trying to prevent these from becoming more harmful.
Joe, did you want to add anything to that as far as lead goes?
Yeah, I mean, you know, specifically with lead, it can still affect adults. Again, you know, part of your bodily process with your liver is lead has a half-life. So once you do ingest it, it's in your blood. And every 30 to 60 days, that content is almost halved. But it's never truly gone. It kind of eventually just breaks down low enough to where your body may store it or process it. But specifically children, you know, anybody really under 14-ish doesn't have a fully functioning liver. And so they cannot process these micrograms. I mean, we're talking thousands of a gram of lead content in your blood. And it even affects adults with shakes and tremors and neurological disorders. You know, headaches, migraines, sometimes it can cause additional bleeding internally, but, you know, specifically with children as they're developing, it's very important to kind of monitor that because it can cause developmental delays. It can cause muscular skeletal deficiencies as well as learning disabilities. So it is kind of a prevalent thing. Some of the famous news examples would be like Flint, Michigan, still amid a lead contaminated water source for most people. You know, a way that I could maybe frame it a little better for people, the visual aid would be one of the consequences with exposure. Something that happened, you know, very near and dear to the nation was 9/11. Now, everyone can tell you exactly where they were when they saw these great plumes of dust go over New York City. But out of that dust It was estimated that 2,000 tons of asbestos-containing debris was put into the air through those plumes. Since then, there has been 19% rise in lung cancer and respiratory-related illnesses for first responders. That's a pretty significant number if you think about it. But out of the 3,000 first responders that have died since 9/11, 1,300 of them have died from a respiratory cancer or related illness, whether it's pleural plaques or esophageal cancer or lung cancer or mesothelioma or asbestosis. They don't quite have it narrowed down, but almost 50% of all first responders that have died since 9/11 have died from a respiratory related cancer, which is kind of disheartening. You know, they not only risk their lives, but now they're paying for it 20, 30 years later. And many people aren't even aware. And if you think about, those are just the people that have been cataloged. There is an estimated 20 million people in New York City, and that cloud encased all of Manhattan Island. And think about how many people were potentially exposed that aren't getting documented from that kind of event. Is that event rare? Absolutely. But it's something to put into a visual perspective for most people.
Yeah. And thank you for that. That's obviously a really unusual event that doesn't happen very often. But something that does happen very often is people on site ripping out walls and removing and replacing these systems that have asbestos. And we have thousands, if not millions, of construction workers in our state that are unionized, that are working on construction buildings or sites. Gabe, do you have something to add?
Yeah, something that Joe mentioned was that you both mentioned was mesothelioma. That is one of the most common things that happens when you're exposed to asbestos. But another one is asbestosis. Now, the difference between the two is mesothelioma is a cancer. Asbestosis is not. So mesothelioma is when there are tumors that grow within your cells, and they expand, and your lungs, they can't breathe. Very similar to asbestosis, that is more of the scar tissue between your lungs, and then you can't not breathe that way. The difference between the two is the aggressiveness. Once you're diagnosed with mesothelioma, you have about a year. That is the expected life once you're diagnosed. Asbestosis, you have about 10 years. And mesothelioma is much more likely for you to develop than asbestosis, because you can develop mesothelioma just based off a couple instances of being exposed to asbestos, whereas asbestosis, you have to be exposed a significant amount of time. So both are very deadly, and mesothelioma is just the more common one that you hear about. In Washington, there's been about 1,700 deaths of asbestosis in the past since about 1990. Asbestosis, there's been about 65. And then Washington State will rank 10th out of all states in deaths of asbestos. So it is still an issue. And like Joe said, 9/11, that left millions of people exposed to it. And then the scary part about it is it takes a long time to see the symptoms of it.
To expand on that even further, the World Health Organization estimates that out of the 255,000 deaths that occur every year in occupational spaces, the World Health Organization estimates that 91% of them come from asbestosis exposure. Now, that's worldwide. There are some countries with absolutely zero regulations, so that number is a little skewed, but 91% of 255,000 individuals that die of cancer, 91% of them is a exposure in a work-related accident or incident.
Yeah, and that's crazy. You know, the construction industry is huge on safety. It always comes first. We want to get people home. But, you know, these long-term impacts of exposure are something that I think we're just starting to understand. So obviously, this is something that we, as people in the design and construction and built environment world, need to be aware of, need to care about. What kind of opportunities, being an interior design background, I hear about friable asbestos, or making sure that these kind of materials are not friable. Obviously, in our building stock, in our state and in our region, we have a lot of older buildings that have been renovated to this point of survival. What does this actually look like for the design and construction industries as far as our renovation and retrofit culture or the demolition projects that are happening in our area? What do we have to look out for? As you mentioned earlier, this is kind of a baseline safety measure that everybody has to do. But what does it actually look like in practice when you guys are on site?
Yeah, first and foremost, it's extremely important to know that there's actually two definitive classifications of asbestos containing materials. Friable is one of them, and non-friable is the other. So friable is, by definition, the ability to crush, pulverize, or turn to dust by hand pressure. An easy way to equate that for visual reference would be if, you know, everybody had bunk beds as a child, everybody had popcorn ceilings in most homes. And if you're up on your bunk bed and you're playing with popcorn ceiling, you are now making the asbestos popcorn friable. You are creating dust. And so classifications aside, but friable materials oftentimes are found with anything that is troweled on or mechanically or otherwise applied to a material. So again, your wall textures, your popcorn ceilings, certain types of mastics, and then obviously pipe wrap insulation. Now, non-friable materials are things that would otherwise have to be mechanically pulverized. So these are your pressed materials. These are your manufactured materials. These are your vinyl tiles, you know, the indestructible ones that you'll see in your grandma's basement that have been there forever, and they just chip up in little pieces, but they don't seem to actually come loose or break up. But in regards to the design and interior inspection space, there are over 3,000 identifiable materials in a home that could contain asbestos. To put that in volume, that's a tremendous amount. That could be anything from your insulation to your wallboard. Actual wallboard, depending on where it's imported from, can contain asbestos. That has been outlawed in kind of an older practice. I've only really only seen that a couple times over the last couple of years. But typically, everybody's older home has a little bit of character. So a lot of things have not necessarily been remodeled, but maybe mom and pop had a can of joint compound in the garage for years and would just spackle a hole in the wall. It's those kind of things. So your joint compounds, your wall textures, your insulation, your HVAC systems, it's best to assume when it comes to any sort of renovation or remodel that everything could contain asbestos. And it's really important when it comes to the inspection process to make sure that the next step is the right step. Abatement and HERA building inspectors for hazardous materials, you know, a survey that's required in Washington State, that is really the first and only step in a renovation project. You get the designer in there, but before we even pull the nail out of the wall, before we even look at our options, we need to identify what we're working with, because it's one of those things that once you contaminate a home, once you disturb the materials, you really don't have many options left, because now every single trade, every single person that steps into that home is potentially exposed, and that slows everything down. So first identifying on the interior space, it's best to assume until proven otherwise that everything has asbestos. And you can still buy asbestos products to this day at certain retail construction supply stores. They still have some roofing tars and tar patches that are asbestos containing. And while recent legislation has outlawed chrysotile asbestos, they have not outlawed every single asbestos. And there's about six different kinds of asbestos classifications of actual fibers. We're getting there as a world, but it's best to assume that everything is until proven otherwise.
Everything is until proven otherwise dangerous, you mean, in some capacity when demolished?
Yeah, I mean, awareness is kind of the first key. A lot of people don't even know that wood fibers will do the same scarring and the same thing to your lungs as asbestos fibers. Silica dust, concrete cutting, stuff like that, foundational work, the scientific data, they're kind of catching up, but it is shown or leaned towards that also causes a drastic change in your respiratory functions. And so when I say that everything is eventually a hazardous removal, everything is at some point dangerous for you. But controlling the dust is the most important key.
You mentioned, you know, all of the different contractors that come into a site after something is demolished, being exposed. What does that look like for you guys as far as tracking that and making sure that everybody on the job site is as safe as possible?
Yeah. So again, it kind of goes back to the classification of friable and non-friable, because each material or each classification of material has different regulatory standards as far as the processes. But when it comes to most, and I say most loosely, but a majority of the material that we run into is typically a class one material, a friable material, and that releases the most dust. So Ideally, you know, we can do a small projects with a mini enclosure, or ideally we can also do some projects where we remove every piece of drywall in a house. And obviously that requires a homeowner or whoever the occupant is to be out of the home, because we have to seal the entire environment in three layers of plastic that are overlapping, that are 6 mil plastic. We have to install negative air machines to scrub and clean the air. And those only do 99.97% of all particulates. We also have to have a decontamination shower that's hooked up to our containment. So anything and everything that comes in and out of the designated area is watered, it's HEPA-vac, it is quite literally showered off, and it's either sealed in a bag if it's debris, or it is cleaned off to any visual debris, like a ladder or something like that. Once the process begins, my guys put on moon suits or Tyvek suits, you know, the hazardous suits. They have to put on powered air purifying respirators that are battery powered, little self-contained breathing apparatuses, and they demo. And then once the demo is cleaned up through a process of HEPA vacuuming, through damp wiping, and then we have to double bag all the material. It goes into one single bag. It is tied. It is goosenecked. It is duct tape shut. Then it goes into a second bag where it is tied, cleaned, duct tape shut, and then it's labeled where that debris comes from. Then it goes out the shower. Once we get all of that done, everything is visually inspected for dust free. Then an asbestos binding compound is aerosized into the air. And what that does is that collects that remaining 0.03% of fibers that aren't collected by the HEPA vacuum. And essentially it binds them. It's a very heavy glue that captures these extremely buoyant fibers that are in the air. These fibers in a perfect vacuum, they will take 72 to 96 hours to fall 8 feet. So they're extremely light when it comes to their buoyancy in the air. So this is all misted and fogged into the environment. It is then settled. And then once it gets to that point and it's settled and the encapsulant is dried, a clearance test is ran. That's verified by a third-party laboratory and it's comparative to pre-samples. Only then and only then is our containment removed, and we are then turn that space back over to contractors or the occupants of the house. And we don't remove a single piece of plastic. We don't remove any single negative airs until that clearance is given. And that's given by a third-party laboratory. Once that's done, I provide anybody and anybody on the job site with said clearance because it's their right to know.
Very cool. That's a wonderful explanation of the entire process. So thank you for that. So Joe or Gabe, can you tell me, as far as, you know, the construction industry right now is facing a number of legislation items and laws that are encouraging clean buildings, and hazardous material removal is obviously a part of that. What kind of value do you think that Puget Sound Abatement can offer our construction industry right now to fulfill that need of hazardous material services when we're doing all of these retrofits?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, as I stated earlier, part of the hazardous removal of materials is more than just asbestos or lead. It is the silica dust. It is even just basic construction dust and some of the gypsum dust that's given off of, you know, non-asbestos containing drywall or plaster. So some of the services outside of asbestos and lead is we also offer general demolition. We offer dust-free demolition. You know, my guys have a certain skill set. They are all annually trained. They are all annually certified. And we specialize in containment removal services. That extends all the way to suspected visible growth and microbial growth, which is a big thing. You know, a lot of people have allergens to mold or any spore development. But again, we also offer general demolition. You want a dust-free demolition environment that, you know, nobody likes to clean up after the demolition guy. Everybody wants to start fresh, and nobody really thinks about the aftermath of just sending people in there with hammers and general labor. We are, you know, not general labor. We are a specialized demolition contractor. You know, the lead, the asbestos, we also are silica compliant to do any sort of interior or exterior concrete cutting. We do have those capabilities. I do have some heavy equipment that we can assist. And with fully certified guys, we're kind of a two-for-one, one-stop shop here. But more than that, I also have 5 certified hazardous building inspectors on staff. We can go out, take samples. We can come out and do inspections to identify and kind of doing even a maintenance plan or asbestos awareness plan, which is kind of a big thing in schools right now. That's got to be done every 3 years. And they don't always have the budget to remove it, but identifying a material, keeping it safe and monitoring its deterioration or degradation is really important. So we can do just about anything. You want a boiler removed, you want an old car removed or cut in half that's found in a basement, we could do that too. You know, we offer a lot of services with a lot of different skill sets that oftentimes transcend into different capabilities and different fields of prospective work.
Great. Gabe, did you want to add anything to that from your marketing and business background?
I would say Joe kind of hit everything on the head for the most part. I would say definitely that a lot of people don't really realize they need us until they need us. A lot of times it's like they're going to sell something and like, oh, wait, where's this? Does it have asbestos? And then they're frantically calling us, asking us if we can get their results to them immediately. So this is like abatement is not something that's on most people's minds until it has to be. And then it's always kind of urgent.
I know a lot of the MEP contractors who are listening to this are people who pride themselves on thinking ahead of problems like this. So it is definitely something that is timely to conversate about. But you do have to go in and actually remove what's in there prior to committing to new designs, whether they're sustainable and moving us forward in that kind of mindset or not. So Gabe, can you tell us really quickly what your service region is, where you work? Some of our listeners are all over the country. So specifically, I know we are in the Puget Sound region, but can you tell us a little bit about your specific reach and what kind of projects generally you take on?
So I would say the general area that we target is this area of the Seattle, Tacoma, so Pierce County, King County, Snohomish, Kitsap, Island County. But for the most part, anywhere in the state, we have gone. So as far as the border of Canada and Linden, and then as far as Vancouver, close to Oregon. Different counties have different regulations, so we always have to adhere to the county regulations. But some of the projects we mainly take on, most of it is asbestos abatement. General demo, a lot of times when it is general demo, we have to test to see if it is asbestos, because if it is, it usually changes the regulations on what we have to deal with. A lot of business we also get is testing. People may have asbestos in their house, but they may not. If they have it, then they at least know it. If they don't, peace of mind, great. But asbestos abatement is one of the main issues we do. We do restoration, demolition, and then we also offer school plans for asbestos requirements. So as you know, school surveys every 3 years have to have their school's plan done. That is a service that we offer in full adherer compliance to the schools.
Yeah, and obviously children health is really important to us here as well. Mm-hmm. So it's in a number of buildings, whether they're commercial, residential, or industrial, or beyond. I know there is our local legislation that is encouraging a number of different kinds of retrofits for building performance, but nationwide, our recent administration has called for a ban on lead pipes. I know some regional infrastructures across the nation use hazardous materials in different kinds of ways, but what does that look like for us in Washington State specifically?
Yeah, that legislation change comes off the back of the original lead and potable water legislation in 1991, where all municipalities and utilities were required to inventory their lead-based or lead leaching pipes, because they found that almost 11% of the 9.3 million homes that had lead-connected pipes had almost three times the allowable limit of micrograms in their potable water. In Washington State, and specifically kind of the West Coast region, it is still an issue. However, it is not as prevalent as it may be in the Midwest to the East Coast. Just as the country keeps progressing, some of our areas over here are a lot newer comparative to some of the East Coast establishments and some of those metropolises over there. We still have some lead-based or lead-containing or lead-leaching water lines, but 10 years on the recent legislation, their requirement to get it all done is going to be an extreme task for, I think, the nation. They set aside I think 15 billion, if I read correctly, 15 billion set aside to help do this, because most of these lines are buried under main roadways. And so if you think traffic's bad now, tearing up every single roadway is quite an undertaking task, and it's going to cost a lot. Because the unfortunate aspect and the reason why they made this change to their amendment is that many of the municipalities did not follow through with the original legislation in 1991. Subsequently, nobody has an inventory of where these lead-based pipes are. A lot of the Washington state municipalities have followed through with that. According to the CDC, Washington state is in the upper echelon of compliance in regards to that. We still have some lead pipe, but it is far minimal compared to some of the East Coast counterparts.
As someone who comes from the East Coast, I can definitely talk about how you hear a lot more about it growing up. In schools, you hear a lot about, and then it's estimated that up to 10 million Americans in their homes have lead pipes connected somewhere to their structure. That is still a huge amount, as well as 400 schools. A lot of schools across the country are older. They have some renovations, but you can't really renovate a lead pipe. In order to remove a lead pipe, you have to change it out completely. You can't fix it there. It has to be taken out. Mainly, copper pipes are what's used for water pipes nowadays. Lead pipes were used long ago, and they're trying to change that, but it is a massive undertaking to try to get rid of all these lead pipes. That's kind of why the timeline on it is 10 years, which is still an extraordinary task in itself. If the administration wants all the lead pipes in the country to be removed in the next 10 years, they definitely have the funding for it, but the manpower and just the hours is an extraordinary task.
Yeah. And I'm sure, you know, we talk a lot about the construction industry's workforce challenges. Are you guys facing those same kind of challenges, or are you actually finding them on a career path where you can train them up on this very specific niche that y'all do?
Yeah. I mean, you hit it right on the head. It is a niche thing. I myself never was fully aware or intended to work in asbestos or hazardous material. As a general contractor, I kind of was aware of that. Didn't quite understand it then, but now I'm fully invested in it. Finding people is extremely tough because they cannot step foot on any job site unless they are certified, because we have to don PPE. So that requires a fit test, that requires a physical, that requires chest x-rays. Some people aren't physically able to do that because wearing a moon suit and a respirator for 10 hours a day is, it's not always fun. But in order to even step foot on the job site, aside from the PPE, is we have to have state accredited training. We have to go through, we have to pass a test. And then once a year, we have to get recertified. And so oftentimes that does involve a test as well. And then once you become a supervisor, you have to pass another test that is a state certified test, but you have to have a requisite number of hours worked in that position. You have to be certified. And then if you even want to be a supervisor or a job site superintendent, you have to have another 1900 hours worked in that specific environment. And then you have to pass the test. And then every year you have to recertify. I've luckily been certified for, I think, about 14 years now. It changes. It's not always the same test, but I can't just have anybody come in off the street. And a lot of people, again, don't know the awareness that this is even a career path. Every single person in my office and every single person that works for Puget Sound Abatement has been promoted from within. Oftentimes we have to find and build off of the ones that are vested in the industry. Having people from the outside, unfortunately, while they may have extremely great skill sets, it is a niche thing, and it does require to be on top of regulations 24/7, because they'll change every 90 days if needed. And having people that are aware of that and cognizant to be able to interpret that is extremely hard.
Yeah, you know, we talk about those kind of gaps and the just general need for upskilling constantly in the construction and design industry all of the time. So you're speaking our language. Hopefully our listeners who are students understand that there are new opportunities for you to explore as careers all of the time. And these kinds of services are valuable and needed in our construction industry. And there's a lot to know and a lot to be aware of. But I think you know, hazardous material removal is something that every single contractor and designer will have to encroach on in some point.
So I would love to add to this. As someone who came into this industry a bit later, I used to think, oh, this was banned in 1979 and the 1989. Won't eventually we run out of asbestos for our jobs? And the more you look into it, biologists, people at the CDC say that will never happen. This is a worldwide epidemic. It's going to be here for the next 100 years. So that's something I really took into consideration. Like 100 years, maybe, if this is taking, because other countries, you can use asbestos. USA is one of the few that has regulations, and there's still other countries can export their asbestos to us. Doesn't happen as often, but for years and years and years, this is going to be considered an epidemic, and asbestos is not going anywhere, unfortunately, even though it is good for our business itself.
Thank you guys for being here today. Can we kind of get your closing thoughts or statements or anything else that you wanted to make sure that you get out there into the world, and then also where people can learn a little bit more about you or connect with you if they have other questions?
You can definitely find more about asbestos. We have a website, Puget Sound Abatement. We have Instagram, same Puget Sound Abatement, Alignable. We post content on there, but what you can see for an abatement firm, as well as tips about asbestos and how you can help deal with it.
Joe, do you have any final thoughts or closing comments or where people can learn more about what you do and who you are?
Yeah, there's 116 natural asbestos deposits in Washington State. You can find a lot of literature that keeps you up to date through either the EPA or your local environmental clean air agency. They have a lot of great literature. They're very up to date. But yeah, you can find us on PugetSoundAbatement.com and at all, if not most, of your local trade shows. We really try to get the asbestos awareness out there, because especially remodel expos, stuff like that, you know, we love to have people come actually look at some of the samples we have in sealed containers and really try to visualize and have people visualize and put something, a face to it, if you will, of what they're actually dealing with and why they would need to pay for such things. And it's very eye-opening. I think with any hazardous environment, especially in construction, learning what silica does, what wood dust does to your body, I think it's best to be safe than sorry. And if we can just contain any and all health hazards and allow people to do their job without having to worry about getting sick from doing it because of somebody else, I think that's the way we should all go.
Thank you for ending on a positive note of safety. So if people are interested in reaching out to you,
they can contact us directly through the website. We do have a chat button that goes directly to our office, directly to my estimating and inspection staff, and sometimes even directly to me. You know, you could reach out to me with any questions at joe@pugetsoundabatement.com. Otherwise, you can use the chat feature on our website, or you can call us directly on one of the multiple phone lines. We have a 24/7 answering service, and you know, I'd be happy to chat and at least point people in the right direction and try to make sure that the next step is the right step here.
I would say one thing is, even if you're in a different state, you can reach out to us just for questions in general and awareness. People where I'm from in South Carolina that were affected by Hurricane Helene in this hurricane season, some of them knew that I worked for an abatement firm, reached out to me because they were worried that some of their homes that were damaged from the hurricane that has asbestos could become fibrous in the air. So that's something, even if you just have a question and you want more information, you can still call us, even in a different state.
Thank you guys both for being here. As always, you can find any links, mentioned resources, and more information about your hosts on our companion document, which you'll be able to find on our website at idcl.wsu.edu.
You can find Building Heroes on anywhere that you stream podcasts or music, including Apple, Google, Spotify, and you can find us on RSS. All of our companion documents are available to anybody who is listening on our website at idcl.wsu.edu/building-heroes-podcast.